Highlights of the night.
That would be TED education. And welcome to the Joint Committee on Emerging Needs and Athletes Subcommittee, Natural Resource Subcommittee for Tuesday, July 13th. Today we have a work session on House Bill 523, Department of Fish and Wildlife Budget. We are going to take some action to clarify one of the budget notes that was inserted in the Department of Fish and Wildlife Budget. So we'll ask Mr. Rocco to bring us up to speed, and we'll ask Mr. Greer to come forward in case there's any questions from the panel. Mr. Rocco.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yesterday, the subcommittee passed out the Fish and Wildlife Budget and had included a budget note presented by Representative Simmons regarding the bear and cougar population. After that, the action occurred. There was some changes to that budget note due to some concerns about the language in the note. As you recall, the committee conceptually changed that note to eliminate the actual numbers that were involved, the numbers of bear and cougar that were being required to be taken. And I passed out before you the revised version of that budget note on the letterhead from Ms. Senator Mark Simmons.
And I think the committee had a bit of a problem with the specificity of the budget note.
Twenty cougars, 40 bears, and each of the five units per year.
And the issue was that the agency wanted to have the opportunity to do the harvest quotas based on their scientific mechanisms. Is that correct, Mr. Greer?
Yes, for the record, Jim Greer, Director of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We met with Representative Simmons, and I think this is a more doable situation that will focus down to three units as opposed to five quotas that would be developed in the same manner that we develop quotas on a regional basis right now.
We are in work session. I would need a motion to reconsider House Bill 5023 and then a motion to amend the budget notes as presented from a legislative fiscal officer, Mr. Rocco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move we step back and reconsider House Bill 5023.
Motion has been made to accept and reconsider House Bill 5023. Everyone understands the motion. Are there any questions? Any objections to the motion? If not, so ordered. We actually need then to insert the new budget note language into House Bill 5023. I would need a motion to do that. President Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move we amend House Bill 5023 to reflect the letter from Mark Simmons. Amend House Bill 5023 to reflect the budget note submitted by Representative Mark Simmons regarding bear and cougar populations.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Any discussion on the motion and questions on the motion? Without objection,
Mr. Chair, I will support this this motion with the department having the understanding that I feel very strongly that they need to take a more active management role in the cougar population. And that I certainly do not want to increase risks of cougar damage to either the ranching stock or to the human population. And believe it's a critical issue. I think I would have preferred the original budget note, but I will support this as long as we have an active management.
President Jensen, your concerns are noted. The increase in bear and cougar mortality on deer and elk populations were discussed at length yesterday by President Simmons and President Beyer and others. Continue.
Just one quick follow. Maybe we have found a solution to our bear and cougar problems. If I read the papers and saw the television correctly, when we have a bear, it has moved into the Portland area. But, Mr. Chair? It just proves that that chum line I used when I drove up to Portland worked. I wanted to point out that recommendation, well, I want to point out two things. One is that when you're on the Natural Resource Substantive Committee as well as the Ways and Means, you hear expanded reports like on the Barron Cougar. And I think I'm correct in stating that when we had the biologists from ODFW, what they reported was that there were increased elk and deer populations in certain parts of the state and decreases in others. So while you have this concern about both the ranch stock and the deer and elk populations, the deer and elk populations tend to be sort of moving with or without the effects of the Barron Cougar. And the other thing I want to point out is if we had gone with Simmons' original proposal for 20 cougar a year out of 5 units, that would have represented 5/7 of the yearly average with when we used dogs. In other words, 140 a year. So, you know, I think we got to be a little bit reasonable here. So I think this is a reasonable question.
Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, I'll call for the question. Mr. Rocco.
Representative Wesson?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Mitchell? Sorry. Representative
Wilson?
Never looked better. You really got insulted there.
Mr. Rocco probably had a good reason to insult me.
Mr. Chair, can you slow that laughter?
Was it something he said?
Representative King.
Senator George. Senator Mitchell.
Aye.
Senator Corson.
Aye.
Chair Perry-Ellen.
Aye.
Motion passes.
And so does the control of this committee to oblivion.
Motion passes, and we'll close the work session.
We'll reopen the work session. Representative Wesson.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 5023 as amended to the full committee with a deep dive recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Wesson. The motion is to move the bill to the full Ways and Means with a deep dive recommendation. Everyone understand the motion? Any objections to the motion? Mr. Ralph, you will call a roll.
Representative Wesson.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Lewis.
Aye.
Representative King.
The budget is a little short, so I'd be glad to provide a courtesy vote to get the full
time. Senator.
Senator George.
Aye.
Senator Metzger.
Agreed that it's short, but I will also get through it, yes.
Thank you, sir.
Senator Corcoran.
Being very well aware of short kind of things, this budget has got some real serious problems, and I'll give a courtesy eye vote.
Thank you for your courtesy vote.
Chair Perry.
Aye.
Motion passes.
Motion passes, and we'll pass to the full waiting for the DCAS recommendation. We already have several carriers in our previous experience, so we'll close the work session on Capitol 1523. We will open up the work session on Senate Bill 1028 relating to the position of hazardous substances. Good morning, Mr. How are you doing? Christian Nickram will present the end work session on Senate Bill 1028. Let's have an overview, and Senator George, I believe, has some presentation on the witness tonight.
I'll keep it short. Mr. Chair, last night we received the A11 amendment. And then I'm handing those out. I also hand in Roche the copy of the bill so you can get an idea of what it looks like after the A11 amendment. There's also a new fiscal impact statement, which is being handed out.
Just getting some need to more to the microphone, I project a little bit. And, I don't think it's appreciated so much as it is the noise from the hall.
The A11 amendments make several major changes. They eliminate reporting to the state fire marshal by employers, owners, and operators when hazardous substances are used and so forth and sold. There's stronger language
in the section regarding investigation, the Department of Agriculture can require information from other agencies in the park area. And then there's also a sunset of December 31st of 2003. I also wanted to correct something that I... Something I said yesterday I wanted to correct, DEQ is not required to investigate every complaint about pollution, but it has to keep reports for 10 years on the complaints that they do investigate.
Absolutely. Senator George, and then there's a section by section on the fiscal, so we can come back to that. Senator George?
Might be a good idea. We're going to have a walk through the section.
You bet. Walk through the year.
And the new fiscal impact that was just done last night, fiscal for Department of Education is the same at $70,000. The Department of Agriculture general fund is $277,172, and other funds are $30,000 for the programs that we discussed yesterday. There's a new general fund amount of $300,000, which would be necessary for the investigation on water testing and the animal exposure. DEQ's fiscal is the same. The total for the measure is $718,686. The FTE remain the same. That would be 2 FTE for the Department of Agriculture and 0.25 for DEQ. Sections 2 and 3. These remove the exemption given to public bodies, and they require federal, state, and local entities to obtain licenses. And there is a fee for commercial operators of $40. Section 5 requires the Department of Education and the Department of Agriculture to develop guidelines for hazardous substances for the poaching programs that are required by the bill. Sections 6 through 9, this is the requirement that school districts and child care facilities implement a program to post notices when hazardous substances are being used. Section 10 requires posting at all local and state parks. Section 11 requires the Department of Ag and DEQ to develop a program for water quality testing for hazardous substances on rivers and streams that are limited for water quality. Section 12 requires the Department of Agriculture to develop an educational program for pesticides used in urban areas. Section 14 is the requirement that the Department of Agriculture investigate reports on aquatic animals if toxic or hazardous substances are present. This is the section that answers the statement that the Department of Agriculture can call on other parks agencies for assistance in investigations. And the amount of the fiscal effect of this particular addition is not able to be determined at this time.
Other states.
Other states and park agencies.
Parks agencies.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator George.
Section 12 refers to the education program. We ended up reestablishing that back into that budget, even if I remember correctly.
In the Department of Agriculture.
Yeah. We haven't. It wasn't put back in it.
Oh.
I thought we
The commentary from the audience is that no, it's not.
Well, many.
A reliable, confidential, reliable source, very close to me, says that no, it was not.
Sir, would you like me to state a list to other agencies that you carried on?
Yes.
So that sticks with me. Those agencies are the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Forestry, State Fish and Wildlife, Department of Environmental Quality. Health Division, Occupational Safety and Health Division, the State Fire Marshal, Director of Poison Control and Drug Information Programs for OHSU.
So there are a variety of state agencies that can be drawn upon to provide investigatory information to. So that is a consortium of agencies that can help the Department of Agriculture fill in this regard. Senator, any questions for Ms. Nichrom? Senator Gerge, did you wish to make the presentation?
I will, really shortly. We're going to have Senator Wild come
just out here. I will do that. The House will be
saying hello. Hi. Members of the House are recognized.
Mr. Chairman, Progressive King said to Gary George, District 2. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning. Long time no see. The development of this bill occurred during the hearing process and tours that Senator Wild and I were part of, looking at a lot of issues relative to environmental law and the condition of the environment. And what we had as we proceeded through that process was became aware that we had, according to the Fire Marshal's Office, about 110,000 hazardous substances in the environment. But what we found out was that the main focus has always been on the 8,000 materials known as pesticides. And of those 8,000 pesticides, there's only 400 that are registered as restricted use. So that left roughly 102,000 chemicals that basically nothing much was known about. And one of the other things that we discovered from conversations with the Department of Ag was that farmers, as you can see, this is actually from my farm, this is a training piece for ag workers on pesticides, even though I do almost all the application, we still maintain all this stuff, is that agriculturalists, commercial applicators, almost everyone who's dealing with any kind of toxic substances are required to have a training program. They're required to post. In fact, some of the signs we were kidding around about today, these are from my operation. You're going to see references in the bill to 8.5 by 11. I'm sorry, this is 8.5 by 11. I cut it. And you'll notice that the lettering was described in there on 8.5 by 11 yellow. This can be run through a photocopier of cardstock, or not cardstock, but different paper. I this is what I do when I'm using a fumigant. I post this on the structures that I'm fumigating. And so these are things that farmers and commercial operators do on a daily basis. And in fact, we have one supplier. I brought the catalog today. In fact, I think you just had handed out a page from that catalog indicating that these products are quickly and easily available. In fact, on the one page down here at the bottom, the little flag that we can flagging a pesticide application cost 29 cents a piece. 29 cents, including a little state. So what we began to realize, though, was that government agencies weren't necessarily required to do the same thing. And I found that amazing because they're dealing with similar materials, maybe even more toxic materials than agriculture and timber and commercial applicators of pest control folks would be using, but we're not required to meet the same exact standards. So we thought that was a loophole that needed to be closed. And as you can see here, that is done in the bill. The other thing that was shocking to me was the aspect when I called districts, or I called school districts within my district, and then I called from outside of my Senate district, I found out that there was no plan, or there was no effort, really, to be of any significance whatsoever, to do reasonable postings on schools and parks. Now, you know, you could come out to my farm, and you would be trespassing if you entered into an orchard that I was spraying. But you could go to a park or a school, and you would be there in this almost identical, maybe the exact same material that I would be using, but you wouldn't have any knowledge. But if you were at my place, and it was a restricted use pesticide, you would see this sign right here around the orchard. And so it seemed only reasonable that you would also focus on areas where, in fact, large numbers of people were present. And so that is why that section came into play. That was actually, that section of the bill came from Senator Kate Brown's bill that came before our committee. What we did was is that we tried to make that bill more workable for school districts, for the parks, and for others who would have to need that. The other thing that has changed in the bill that from current practice is today I could go to work with a school district and be hired to go spray the lawn with, or the roses or whatever, with a pesticide. I could be using some other toxic substance, and I may be required to keep a record depending on what the material was. But the interesting thing is, if the school district or I decided that we were going to part company as far as employment, I would be required as that applicator to keep the records. And so we said, well, that's ridiculous. Those records need to be present, you know, so that if anything develops in the future on a park or a school, that you may be able to identify things that were applied in the past. So one of the things you'll notice in that piece I handed out is that all of these things are very easily available. We changed the, for example, school district, this record-keeping poster that is available, notice posters also, very inexpensive. This one right here was $8.95. There's others that are plasticized. You can wipe, mark them and then remove them, that are like $39. Very inexpensive type thing. What this does, though, and one of the points I want to make, I had it suggested to me this morning that this may cause paranoia. Well, if that was the case, then we would have created great paranoia with this, because I can tell you I personally believe that these cautions are exaggerated. I really do. But you know what happens? It doesn't create that. The initial reaction is maybe one of saying, kind of startled, well, how big of a risk is this? And then, of course, what you do is you look at the materials, you read the labels, you take the proper care to establish safety. What you find is that then you just establish a conduct that is very reasonable, but is protective of health and human safety. So what we attempted to do, though, was not just focus on those 8,000 chemicals, but to focus on the 110,000. Senator Tarnow and his Committee on Water and Land Use had several hearings dealing with water quality. What is happening in our rivers? What's wrong with the Willamette River? So we have malformed fish in that river. And many of you have heard me tell the story about the fact that after a flight in from California in my aircraft, I landed at Newburgh and said, I'll never get in that river again. And I have not been in that river since. And so the point of that is, though, if in fact you're going to have water that is contaminated, do we just continue to permit that pollution to be entered into it because we know it's headed out and into the estuaries along the coast? Or do we actually try to identify what the sources are and try to maybe mitigate some of that pollution? Agriculture and timber has done tremendous work on that. Changes in the last 10 years of us addressing this are pretty significant. One of the things you notice, a lot of the pollution comes from urban use, and that's why it's part of the bill dealing with urban education. In other words, you need to realize that if you have some of a pesticide or some other toxic chemical, that you don't flush it down the toilet or put it into a drain. You actually dispose of that properly. So that is why the section is attempting to carry out basically what the Department of Agriculture and the governor indicated that they wanted to do. This just firmly says, yes, we want you to proceed that direction. And you'll notice that the bill is structured in kind of like a long-term basis. This is a direction bill. This is where we want you to head. We want to know what's in the water. We want to know what's in the air. And we want to be able to, on the basis of that data, then make decisions about that. And if there are children involved, we want to be able to have them know what they should and shouldn't do. I believe that the bill in its final form is very balanced. Let me point out one thing. I made mention of this the other day. House Bill 2431, which is the Associate Organ Industry Toxic Right to Know Bill, had the provisions in it similar to what was in this bill, which had been removed with the amendment, which had to do with the fire marshal's database. That is passed. I mean, that'll be crossed our floor soon. House Bill 3602 is the same way. That's the pesticide section. Those sections have now been removed from this bill. What we attempted to do was to bring all of these different issues into one bill and be able to address it rather than a multitude of bills. In other words, a holistic approach, you know, to dealing with the issue of toxic substances. So with that, then what we have left, I believe, fits together very well with 2431 and with 3602. And that is, puts the arms around those bills, brings them in, and sets kind of a policy direction for the state of Oregon as far as protection of our citizens, protection of our waterways, protection of our salmon stocks. And the bottom line is, as an agriculturalist and as a person who uses, I'm a licensed pesticide applicator. And one of the things that you learn really quickly is, anyone in that industry, is you want to know what's happening out there. We constantly monitor the environment on our own to determine whether we think what's happening is beneficial or is a negative effect. That's something we do on a regular basis. What this does is that the whole society should take that approach, that we really do need to be properly informed. What are the risks? What can we do about the potential for those risks? Particularly, one of the things that I hope that you consider greatly is the idea that before we would use any water source for human consumption, so we would in fact know everything about that. An interesting thing, when we had this subject discussed before our committee, we were told that about 56 criteria had to be met in order for a water source to be, after the remediation, the treatment of that water was done, that water source would then be acceptable for human consumption. I asked the question, do you with that understand, and have you removed all 110,000 toxic substances? And the answer was no.
Senator Gergen, there are about 40 or 45 key indicator chemicals that are actually acceptable, heavy metals, and fairly common indicators. And if you're below the federal standard on those 45, then that meets the federal Clean Water or Safe Water Drinking Act. That's about the extent of testing.
That's the extent of testing, and that was exactly it. Now, we're not saying that we go beyond those standards. We're just saying that we need to know more information. And, you know, part of the effort of this legislature, I believe, very aptly has been, as far as our research package and everything that we've passed through, was to make sure that you glean the maximum amount of information and data, that you know what we're doing, that you enable our folks, say, like, for example, in ag and timber, to make adjustments in fishing industry, make adjustments to a new reality. And so that is the same thing here. We need to know. In fact, a lot of these packages, a lot of the things that are in the bill, you'll notice fit very well as far as water quality with Measure 66 actions and with the Oregon Standard Plan. And so what this bill does is basically just reach out, grab it, pull it in, as I said, and then set a direction for the state. And with that,
Senator, I know that the key feature of the legislation is that you're applying to state agencies. Same standards for reporting that applicators in the private sector have had to live with.
Absolutely.
I was wondering, what's the inspiration for that? Well, ask the other question, why do we have the exemption in place?
Well, that actually startled me. I was really shocked because, you know, I'm going to tell you, when you go to instruct your children, they'll say, you know, lead by example. And that's been one of the greatest shocks for me relative to this issue, is that we do not, as agencies, lead by example. I will go out and regulate timber and agriculture all the time, but we won't do it ourselves. We won't be responsible. Yet those folks' opportunity to expose anyone to hazardous substances is minimal. But on these grounds right here, in a park, in a school district, there's a great opportunity for exposure. First of all, we're saying you need to measure the risk, and if in fact there is a potential risk, and you'll see, like with the parks and with education, that they're developing a program that is reasonable. You see words in there like these should be mass-produced products, and or from your photocopier with yellow paper. So it's a baby step, but at the same time, I believe the public is saying that they believe they have a right to know. Our right to know bill in 2431, that was a response to public pressure. 3602, right to know, basically, with pesticides, that was a response to public pressure. I think we need to complete that circle and say that we're not going to focus just on a few chemicals under 2431, which fire marshal will track all of them, nor pesticides in 3602, but we're going to basically discuss all hazardous substances that are in the state. We need to know that. There's something wrong with the rivers, and we need to determine what those effects are. I think it's very moderate. It's been toned down greatly. And so I ask for your support on this.
Further questions for Senator George on the bill? Senator Lesinski?
For the 190,000 chemicals?
No, 110,000.
Yeah.
And there's about 8,000 of those are pesticides, and about 400 of them are restricted use. So there's about 102,000 other hazardous substances.
And so, for schools to do posting, would it be the 110,000 chemicals, or would it be the other ones?
You'll notice in the bill, we exempted some things that are pesticides, cleaners, disinfectants, and stuff like that. A school district also, under emergency conditions for schools, you'll notice if they had to treat head lice, you do it in an insecticide operation with lice. That's what you're doing. You're killing it. And so they're exempted for that sort of emergency operation to be able to do that without any of these things. So you know what's interesting? If there's a head lice infestation, what do? You contact the parents and notify them. And so that is something that currently happens. This is just going one step beyond that. And, of course, as you see, with the Department of Education and the Department of Agriculture, they will develop a reasonable plan. And there's been some rather ridiculous things said about this bill that are not true. In fact, one of the things I'd like to clarify right now, why we have this on public record, it's been suggested, I heard this yesterday from several sources, that I was holding House Bill 3602 hostage, that I was holding Senate Bill 12 hostage to pass this bill. That's absolutely false. 3602 is free and headed on its way to a committee without any involvement of me. And so in Senate Bill 12, we're trying to reach a compromise with the governor's office. So if any of you have heard those rumors, those are not true. And if you hear anything like that, please give me a ring. But I hope that answers the question.
Well, what I was going on that is that I know on 2431 that also was dealing with the entire federal list. And, things like vinegar were on there. And so, a lot of common materials. So the signs that you had this morning would look pretty scary in a school kitchen. And I was, wondering, what falls on that.
They are exempted from that. Your ordinary clean materials relative to school are exempt. My thought is that if I was a school administrator, I would weigh that. And depending on what the agent was, I'm required, let's say as a school administrator, to deal with the idea of concentrated chlorine, and I must store that in a reasonable way, in accordance with rule. I don't think there's a thing wrong. I have these things all over my farm. No one is paranoid, from compressed air to propane to fumigants. Everyone understands, they read these, and what happens is you come into what I would call a responsible comfort zone. In other words, you understand, like this with training our employees, these placards are all over our farm and in our processing plant. And yet everybody reads them. You notice that they're in Spanish and English. You flip it over and it's in the other language. And so it's not a major issue. These are the things that we're requiring of agencies that are independent business people have been doing for a considerable number of years. We've required them to do it. It's time for us to step up to the plate and say, we're going to do the same.
I had another question.
Representative.
I was wondering what the definition of watershed was, for the purpose of this legislation. The reason I ask that is that Section 21 makes it seem that, if some hazardous material is found, anywhere in the stream, then it's the entire watershed. And so, for example, if we got something in Newbury Pool, then because of that, the whole watershed is, the Willamette watershed. And I have a number of cities that are dependent upon the Willamette for the water, and I didn't mean to differentiate whether it's upstream or
everything in there.
What is quote from the language that's in this bill is this, is that if in fact I test the neighbor's pool and I come up with a chemical in there, I prefer maybe dioxin. Okay, what I would do then is I would then sample an intermediate area up the Willamette, and I would measure those samples. And this is, you know, this is not scientific stuff. This is stuff I would do as a farmer to try to establish what the source was. And then when I found out where that was, then I would recognize when I tested above and I found that not that being present, then I would go back and I would say, okay, we have two tributaries. Let's test those. We find out it's from this one. You can be very specific. You recognize that that might only have involved five or six water tests. And one of the things we tried to do in this bill was to coordinate the water, the laboratories that we have within state agencies to actually give them direction to work together in order to have a system in which we can measure this. Because we're going to be sending our watershed commissions, our soil conservation districts out to pull samples. And so what we're saying is it's a good idea to record that data, to bring that data in so that we, in fact, can identify a problem, and then not just issue another permit for that, but actually work with the people to reduce any potential influence upon that stream or that river. So I hope that would answer your question. I think it's a very reasonable thing to do. It's a simple process that anyone would logically follow just to establish this point.
You didn't answer to my question, but I'm wondering why that section doesn't have some limitations to say, well, you know, go ahead and, you know, test the stream and so that we're seeing from narrowing to that spot. I also had some thoughts about, you know, the downstream, because, you know, clearly if something's bad in a location, you know, we want to know about that and do something about that. But it's also possible that by the time you get downstream and an episode is over, that the dilution is so tremendous that it, you know, the downstream also becomes cleared as well. And I just didn't see good ways of isolating the problem area.
You can see what we're doing here. We're setting a broad direction and then indicating to the agencies that we want them to fine-tune the plan. And so, and one of the things, too, that I think is important in the bill is that it does instruct them to coordinate. And many of us have been shocked that there has not been an exchange of data. And it surprised me, for example, DEQ. I called and said, I want to know the point source locations of every tributary on the Willamette River. And I want to know the quantity of discharge, and I want to know the chemical makeup. Not available. A limited amount. Well, some of them we know, some of them we don't. My personal indication, with the threat of the feds upon us, with the threat of initiatives that may come upon us, it's only responsible then to kind of try to preempt that by doing the responsible thing. And I think that's what the bill does.
And George, a couple of our members have meetings to attend. Okay.
Get back over here. Thank you.
Unless there's other questions you would come.
No, it's done.
Is this just Donna?
So, Russell, what's
the one? I'm sorry, Senator, when I sat down here, I was perfectly prepared to vote no on this bill today, but after listening to your testimony and reading the bill, you've won me over.
We are in work session. We need a motion to move the Dash A11s into the bill, and then a motion to move the bills to the full ways and means. Do you have a commentary that you need to share with us? Is there a standard? No, it's actually...
We would need conceptual language for the appropriations and other fund expenditure limitations. Sure. And also the agency indicated that suggestion that we put $300,000 expenditure or appropriation as a special purpose appropriation in the e-board. That's the new one that's going to increase the fiscal impact.
How much going in the e-board?
$300,000.
Okay.
That's the general fund appropriation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the conceptual?
Yeah. Actually, we need a conceptual on the $30,000 other fund appropriation, and then a reservation, and then to move the A11s into the bill and the bill to the full ways and means of the default. That's the chat string we're looking at.
And then one or two.
Let's go ahead and move to the conceptual $30,000 appropriation.
Alderman Stonewall?
Mr. Chair, I move to amend Senate Bill, A and Grove Senate Bill 1028 to reflect a fiscal impact of $30,000 other funds and a $300,000 reservation in the Army Board.
And that would be general fund reservation?
General fund reservation.
Questions on the motion? Everybody understand the motion?
Objections to the motion?
Hearing seeing none, so ordered.
We need the A11 to move into the bill.
President Westman?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move A and Grove Senate Bill, or I move that we amend A and Grove Senate Bill 1028 with the amendments reflected in the A11 dated 7/12.
Representative Westman moves the A11 amendments into the bill. Any questions on the motion?
Any objections to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Representative Whistle, we need to accept the LFO recommendations on the rest of the fiscals.
Mr. Chair, I move Anglo Senate Bill 1028 reflect the recommendations of legislative fiscal analysts.
Questions on the motion? Hearing and seeing none. Objections to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. And we need a motion to move Senate Bill 1028 has amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Oh, to the floor.
The full ways and means of the due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I move Andrew's Senate Bill 1028 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Questions on the motion? Representative West, Messerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I will vote with the courtesy vote to the chair in favor of this passage bill. I reserve the right to
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I too will offer a courtesy vote to move this out of the committee here. Principally, I think the Dash 11s are rather long, complicated amendments, and I need some time to look them over before we get there. And I'm sorry I missed much of the testimony this morning.
Representative Jensen still noted. Representative Westman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just like to say I support this bill. I think as it goes through our process, there could be some further amendments. I think the spirit and the concept behind this bill is a good bill. However, my yes vote is conditional upon Representative Messerly carrying this bill on the floor.
I too will vote this bill to full ways and means with a courtesy, but I would like to reserve the right to vote differently on the floor, pending the outcome of what it finally ends up looking like.
Professor
James. Well, I have a question stating as the question was, as I'm hearing a lot of courtesy here, was this as a due pass or as a just a motion without recommendation?
I think we had a due pass.
And then also, there are some things in this bill that I do think are good, and I think there's some valuable expertise from Senator George, but I wasn't satisfied in terms of how to isolate how we deal with the water supplies for municipal economy. So you got enough courtesy vote, you know, well, thank you.
Senator George.
I would like to clarify that other than the small language addition, that basically what Dash 11 does is remove all those sections of 2431 and 3602 that were in the bill. So when you folks look at it, what you'll find is it just cleans the bill back to being dealing with the things other than those other two bills.
And just a point of order for the chairman on the water withdrawals from water bodies that have been addressed to be contaminated. Is that also removed by the
No, that is not. That does not affect any existing water sources. It's only for future water sources.
Right. And I think that was a concern that Representative Steen mentioned because all the Newville Willamette Valley communities are discussing surface water sources and water gets more scarce. I think that becomes a greater concern. I don't think that's the basis for the objection.
And I'm not seeing the thing that said past versus future, but June was the future, so it would be hard.
Yeah. Understood, and finally, we should have to take the vote on the motion.
Turn your back on him.
Thank you. Yes, sir, you have to. We have you called for vote, yes.
Hey.
Mr. Chairman, will you call the vote again with the staff side?
All right,
thank you.
Mr. Chairman, could I clarify before we vote?
Yes, sir.
Okay. If you look on page 10 of the bill and down on line 29 and 30, the greater use of water from as new sources of drinking water. And with our understanding, that left everyone else in front.
Motion passes and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1028 as amended. Our chair will carry to the full AG. Senator George will carry on the Senate floor.
And Senator Wild carry on the Senate floor. We'll try to do three votes at the same time, the ones I did in the second.
Senator George, do you want to co-carry that? That way that will give you an opportunity to close.
Yes.
And on the House floor, I'd like to have volunteers from the House floor.
Mr. Chair, I thought we made a public recognition.
I acknowledge a public denial, is what I thought.
my yes vote.
First George, you better quit being here.
President Morgan is out of the room. President Westman is the cable carrier for the House floor.
We will supply you with more green paper.
I'll give it a pass.
Unquestionably. And that closes the work session. And we're in recess until 9:30 when we will consider, 9:40 when we will consider the newly posted agenda, which is Senate Bill 93. So we're at ease until 9:40.
All right.
The committee is at ease.
Good morning, and we are in a work session, and we're reconvening our work session this morning on Senate Bill 93. And what I'd like to do to begin with is have our legislative fiscal officer discuss briefly and present for our panel Senate Bill 93. And then I'll ask Senator Tarno to describe his intentions for the bill. And my understanding is that we have some amendments that are in the drafting process. And so what we'll do is from this work session, we will go into continuance, and we'll continue this hearing tomorrow in the morning when the we anticipate the draft amendments will be available to everyone. So we'll go ahead and have a brief presentation from legislators. Proceed from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 93A.
For the record.
Rick Olson, Legislative Fiscal Office. Senate Bill 93A establishes the Joint Task Force on Water Supply and Conservation. It also directs the Water Resources Department to establish financial assistance programs for individuals implementing conservation measures as part of development and implementation of conservation programs. It also allows the use of supplemental water rights for groundwater in lieu of primary water rights that divert water from surface water source. You have before you the A6 amendments that Senator Tarno will address, and as the chair mentioned, we also have additional amendments coming that will be here tomorrow morning.
Any questions for Mr. Olson? If not, Senator Tarn, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Senator Bill Tarno, District 24. And Senate Bill 93 is what's proposed after spending several sessions working on water issues in committees in this process. And I have the bill drafted because of concerns that I have about the potential need for water 20 and 30 and 40 years down the road in our state, and especially those areas where we are experiencing a lot of growth in the Willamette Valley, the I-5 corridor, large cities, as well as the Portland metro area. I've heard from the city of Portland that they're anticipating having to expand into a second Bull Run for having water for that area. We've already known that we have problems in the city of Wilsonville because they're under, or were under, and probably still are, a moratorium on water use. So they're lacking water also. And what the intent behind this bill is to create a working group to put together a proposal or a series of proposals for the next legislature or the next legislature after that to consider our needs for future water use. Initially, the bill was fairly in-depth because it went beyond just putting together a task force. It even went to the point of trying to establish a program where we would fund some storage facilities in the state. And because of the cost and physical impact, they had to come out, and now the bill is just down to the issue of creating a task force to review the needs for future water needs of our state. A task force would be comprised of 11 members, and there would be one from either side of the house, as well as an individual from ag and water users, some from municipal industrial water users, two from environmental and fishing interests, and two from industry stakeholders would comprise the work groups. And as part of that, they have the ability to draw from the expertise from hydrologists and economists, a rural or urban planner, or even a biologist. The group would have the ability to draw from those folks as far as putting together a proposal for future needs for water use in the state. And in a nutshell, very crudely, Mr. Chairman, folks, that's the essence of the bill.
Questions for Senator Tarno? Representative Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Tarno, funding, question five, as I have it here. We have blank spaces there, and it's not the dollars that I'm interested in so much as it is Section 4, Article 15 of the Oregon Constitution, which happens to be the section dealing with Ballot Measure 66. I need to know where
I'm
going or plan to go, you know, with that.
President Jensen, that's one of the amendments being drafted currently to take that section out of the bill.
Thank
you. Looking at the fiscal ballpark, $100,000, Mr. Chairman, of the committee to fund the task force, and that's the essence of the funding program.
Question, Representative.
Would the task force be in addition to or in lieu of doing a statewide water supply study? I know we need to do the kind of study, and you know whether we do an agency task force or a Blue Ribbon task force. I'm not real strong on right now either way, but I want to know if we're doing this instead of proceeding on doing, you know, a master statewide study, if we're going to study how we're going to study and then, you know, initiate a study, you know, a couple of years down the road.
Well, Mr. Chair, we're going to be a standalone issue, and essentially it would entail conducting part of the study. The task force could review a myriad of issues. The issues perhaps could be the quantity of water available in any given basin. The 36, 35, 19 basins in the state, Water Resources has some information and data available now pertaining to those basins and the quantity of water available. Just that information the task force could study and take into consideration.
I'll learn more between now and tomorrow.
Senator Sarno, if there's no other questions from the panel, we are going to be continuing. I think there will be other questions when the amendments are ready. We'd like to ask the director to come forward and discuss on the screen briefly, and then we'll continue the hearing. So, the work that we do at the moment.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Marcia Tagle, Director of Water Resources Department. What I'm handing out to you is another copy of a document you've seen previously, a description of our stewardship and supply initiative, as well as some materials that were put together when our budget was before you. They considered this task force concept. I guess what I want to offer up today is a reminder that the stewardship and supply initiative as an option package in our budget was one of the most important measures that we brought to you in the budget process. And I know there was a lot of interest on the committee to fund that, but I also know that as yet it has not been funded. It was proposed for funding under Measure 66. At this point, it's my understanding that it remains a high priority for the governor to obtain funding for implementation of that option package, at least at perhaps a lower level of $1 million for implementing the key elements of the stewardship and supply initiative, and that might hopefully come from general fund, and that discussions are still underway. We actually won't know until the close of the session whether that money will be there or not. What's important to keep in mind is that the key element of the stewardship and supply initiative was the information base that it would develop. It would authorize our department to compile updated, detailed inventories of water supply and needs in each basin. And it is both an evaluation of resources and a needs assessment for the future. The task force concept came along as we discussed Senate Bill 93 in cooperation with Senator Tarno, members of the Senate Water Committee. Early in the session, we were hoping that 93 would be a vehicle for implementing that option package that would add additional policy direction and more meat on the bone, so to speak. The Senate Bill 93 included the concept of this task force, and the original thinking was that the task force would help develop policy recommendations for use of the information that would be gathered under the Stewardship and Supply Initiative, for use of that needs assessment and supply information. So where we're headed right now is a package that gives that policy discussion a chance to happen, but they don't really have any meat to work with. They don't have the basic information to do the job. So it is still very important that we keep our eye on the ball funding for the updated basin inventories that are included in the Stewardship and Supply Initiative, and I'm really hopeful that we'll be able to get the funding to do that. If we don't, a task force can certainly be helpful. It at least keeps us focused on the issue of stewardship and supply and planning for the future, but it's sort of toothless because it's a study group and it doesn't really have the information that it's going to need, and the question was asked, you know, what can they really do? There's not a lot that they can do in the way of specific recommendations until we have the information base together. And I guess the final consideration before you is if you do want to form a task force, in what form? One option, sort of a lower budget approach, could be to simply have the department form a task force of stakeholder interest as we have in the past and report back to you 2 years from now. I think what you'll see in the amendments and my understanding of what Senator Tarno is proposing is a task force which is legislatively sanctioned and includes members of the legislature as members of the task force. And I can support that. I wouldn't stay here and say that I would refuse that. I just want to plant the seed with you that in some cases it's easier for a group to work and develop recommendations without legislative members, because there's sort of an imbalance that occurs when you have elected officials sitting at the same table with other interest groups. So a consideration and the department preference would be that this occur as stakeholders reporting back to you. But I think that what you'll see in the amendments tomorrow is a task force which can do a legitimate and useful purpose and can certainly function in the way that it is being set up, and can be, the work can be accomplished for approximately $100,000, which would be used to fund expenses related to task force administration, notices, copying, technical assistance, perhaps facilitation services, perhaps some temporary assistance in our department to carry out the work, but it has a limited price tag of about $100,000.
Any further questions? Ms. Tegel, the chairman really appreciates the time that you've spent with the attempt to bring stewardship and supply forward, especially the concepts for Senate Bill 93. I know that Senator Tarnow has worked diligently on Senate Bill 93 since the beginning of the legislative session. We were hoping that it would find a higher priority in the co-chair's budget, and I think they would certainly have been willing to fund Senate Bill 93 and the stewardship and supply issues more generously if more resources had been made available to natural resource section. We are in hopes that there will be an additional infusion of dollars into natural resources before the end of the legislative session, which we are facing imminently, and if that does happen, there possibly is another opportunity to revisit the stewardship and supply issues. In the meantime, Senator Tarnow is invited to bring forth his amendments tomorrow to a continuation of this work session. We'll consider 93 at that point in time with a revised fiscal impact statement. We may or may not see the director tomorrow because she is celebrating the 20th anniversary of her wedding and has a very important engagement to attend. And if we choose, fine. If not, congratulations, ma'am.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. King has his hand up. This is recognized.
Well, thank you. I do anticipate some questions for the department tomorrow, but appreciate your situation and some of
the for the delegate for the department. And Representative Westman.
Mr. Chair.
Sir.
I was here on Sunday diligently, and you know how hard it is to pass out $5 billion worth of budgets. On Sunday, that's what we did. On my 12th anniversary, needless to say, I am in the, not the big league doghouse, I'm in the very small doghouse, you know, out behind the out behind. So in a sense of consistency and fairness, I think Ms. Tegel has an obligation, if to no one else, at least to me, to be here tomorrow.
Listen, Wilson, what you just described shouldn't happen to a dog. You might be living in the doghouse, but you wouldn't wish that on anyone else. Listen,
I'm sure. I think the point is that in 8 years, somebody let them have a day off.
Yeah.
Well, and actually, if we put this in proper perspective, as opposed to Representative Westman, Ms. Tegel has a life outside this.
And does not have a vote in this building.
Representative,
I think it's real obvious why he has a well-worn dog house on back, and he probably a new remodel.
He's a big dog house, a big league dog house, a closer to the house, a little league dog house, behind the house. Any further gratuitous comments?
Before you let us quickly, when we get back to 10/28, A11, I want everyone to remember that this whole middle session is just restating of the parts that are going to be changed because of the sunset. So,
okay, and
then this is very, very small.
Thanks, Senator Jordan. Tomorrow, when we're in work session on Senate Bill 93, you owe Senator Tarnow for taking time away from his bill presentation today. Thank you very much. We are in continuation of this work session tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. And we're closed and adjourned for